The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's MLK Day in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to tell you how one college basketball team had a seminal moment on Saturday, and also a rather awkward aftermath. Before you get into a gold rush in San Francisco, we're going to break down some of those 49er numbers in a historical perspective that make you want to take a second glance. And for the best of tonight's board, time to go to the soda fountain. We're going to drink a little Orange Crush.
So, Dave, busy weekend, ton of action, NBA, NFL, college hoops. What'd you see that you want to share with our viewing audience?
Well, a lot of memorable things out there this weekend, but you know what I appreciated the most? Chris Paul's now in the neighborhood. And you know, when Chris Paul was playing in different spots in the NBA, you don't get a chance to fully focus in, because when New Orleans would be playing, so many other games going on, especially in the college ranks. But now we get some standalones with the Clippers. And Saturday night, Clippers-Lakers in our pockets, and also the only thing going at its particular time. And you appreciate watching what Paul does, not only impacting the franchise, but look at what he's going to do for careers. A guy like Blake Griffin, raw, athletic, doesn't know a lot of basketball, now has a coach on the court. Vinny Del Negro, maybe one of the biggest breaks any young coach could ever get, is actually having a coach on the court for you. But you know what, when you got your money on Paul down the stretch, when they come up the court, you honestly feel like the shot clock is at about 40 seconds. It's amazing how calm, how collected he is to get them into their flow, knowing that even with 2 or 3 seconds left, he can still make something good happen. We're going to enjoy watching Chris Paul an awful lot out here on the coast. Clippers are going to win a lot of games, but it's just the career impact he's going to have on Blake Griffin, who could have been an entirely different player without having someone like Paul to teach him the game. And how much mileage is Del Negro going to get out of this? Teddy, a whole lot to talk about. What did you bring in on a Monday morning?
Well, we got to talk about the cell phone, right? No, I'm kidding. But my buddy did get his cell phone back. Great story, but Malinsky kiboshed the cell phone. He's kiboshed part two. He said, no way are you going to be able to tell that on air.
And you did anyway.
Well, I just said he got it. You know, people want to know how it ended. He got his phone back.
Did we get one letter from anybody saying, how did the story end? Did the guy get his? We didn't get one.
You told me I'm not allowed to tell the story, so I'm leaving it alone. I'm just saying that people want to know. They got his phone back. And the taxi driver who stole it got fired. So it's a two. We could do a first take on the Texans over yesterday. How'd that play look? Oh, with about 35 minutes left to go and 30 points on the board, all you need is one little touchdown to cash that ticket. And, of course, we didn't get it. The great goal line stand from Houston in the third quarter of that ball game. Missed field goals, the whole nine yards. A bit of a frustrating one for our pockets and certainly for yours as well, with the play of the day loser on that Texans over. Not a wrong side, unfortunately, a wrong result. But where I really want to go with the first take today is to talk about the Packers and the Saints, the two juggernauts, the two teams that were well above power ratings-wise, well above any other team in the NFL all season long, including New England, including San Francisco. Those were the two best teams in the regular season. Both teams, bye-bye. And it was almost the same story for both squads. They were able to mask their defensive weaknesses throughout the course of the regular season. They were able to mask their weakness running the football throughout the course of the regular season. The postseason ain't the regular season. Saints and Packers both found out the hard way this past weekend. Let's shift over to Market Watch. We have to talk about the new NFL lines, and those numbers are up, and they're already kind of cemented into place. The New England Patriots, 7.5, total of 50.5 against Baltimore on Sunday in the early game. And the late game, San Francisco, 2.5-point favorite against the Giants. Total there, sitting at 43.
going to be a very volatile marketplace. So the sooner you can make a decision as to who you like, and you know, we know so many of you already wake up knowing that for this week, you have a lot of chances to do some shopping to get into play. New England, of course, creates an awkward setting for the books because of the teaser elements. A lot of places don't want to hang the 7.5 because there's that automatic tease down, especially with the Giants, creating a tease up on the other side of that. So some of your offshore places, the Pinnacles, the Five Dimes of the world, will be using nines, moving the money off of that. You have some maneuverability there. Big question, too, in San Francisco, is somebody going to be willing to go to a 3? We see a lot of places 2.5 and money right now, some leaning towards the San Francisco side, which means that they may have to get to 3 at some point. Give me a question if you're a bookmaker. Do you run the risk of going to 3, knowing the minute you do where your next bet is going to come from, or do you just hang the 2.5 with money and say, we're just going to adjust the money odds, we'll never move off this 2.5? So if you're looking for the Giants and you want to find a 3, be ready to pounce quickly. When they show, they're not likely to last very long.
It's MLK Day, and that means that there's NBA action already going. In fact, we have our first game at halftime right now. I haven't seen a number pop up. Oh, what do we got? Chicago minus 4.5 and 86. Of course, the Bulls are down 18 at the break at Memphis, losing 56-38. We'll have a halftime line for Orlando and New York shortly when that game goes to half as well. But NBA action nonstop throughout the day. Let's shift our focus to the pro hardwoods, and we have a good way to start right from the mailbag. Great email coming in from Travis. He says, with unders playing to 112-75 so far in this distorted NBA season, is now the time to start betting overs? Will the lines adjust down now that we're 10 games in and scoring is down? I've been playing Toronto all year to go under with Casey's new D and making a fortune. Do you think the lines will start to adjust? When will I know it is time to start betting overs when bettors recognize the difference in this team? P.S. Love the show. Thanks, Travis. What do you say, Dave?
Actually, really good timing, because tomorrow's postmortem, the first segment, is going to be discussing those changes in NBA scoring we've seen so far this year. We wanted to wait till every team got 12 games under their belt, and every team had at least 3 games home and away, so things could balance out a little bit. There's a lot going on. We're going to bring this to you tomorrow. But it's one of the little things, just to seed this a bit, not just the pacing or offensive efficiency being down. One of the keys to the scoring being down, so many blowouts. Wins by 20 points or more are up 25% over the same span last year. Wins by 30 points or more are up 40% over the same number of games played last year. What's happening is in a lot of these blowout games, the underdogs are waving the white flags early. They're saying, look, this is a short season. We got to keep our guys fresh. We can't win this. Let's quit. The minute they quit, the favorites naturally want to do the same thing. You're doing them a favor. So that blowout factor is one of several keys we'll be talking about tomorrow's first postmortem segment. Is it time to start shifting gears? We're getting pretty close to it.
You want proof this is a live show? Here's proof. I misread the halftime score. The Grizzlies are actually up 20 at the break. So far, all the money has come in on Chicago in the second half. That 4.5 opener already up to 5.5, even a 6 in one key location. Guys, this is your show, and you've been doing a great job giving us feedback, giving us suggestions, and giving us interesting questions to discuss on air. Please keep those emails coming. The address, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter, @VegasSportsDay, and you can get involved in the community. There's active threads and discussions going right now, covers.com/postingforum. And I would be remiss if I did not mention the Super Bowl party Friday night before the Super Bowl at the Shadow Bar right across from the Sportsbook at Caesars Palace right here in Las Vegas. Hey, we've already had more than 200 RSVPs. You should be one of them. If you haven't sent in yet, it's real easy. Send an email to party@covers.com. That's all you need to walk in the door. It is free, free food, free drinks. You get to hang out with me and Dave for a couple hours, although be careful Dave doesn't slide out the back door real early. But bottom line, we're going to be there. Please join us on the Friday before Super Bowl. That's Friday, February 3rd, and send that email address at RSVP to party@covers.com.
Well, speaking of the back door on the break, we got to sneak out and see if the janitor's got that 6 on Chicago for the second half. When we return, it's postmortem time. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
No pressure. Hi, I'm... Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from... Can't think of the name on my damn show. Golf and other four-letter words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think. Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gowns on. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you the things you should be seeing, but probably aren't.
Saturday brought quite a celebration for the Florida State fans in Tallahassee, and it should have. The team had a stunning 90-57 win over North Carolina, one of the most dominating performances we will ever see against an opponent that good. Now, naturally, when the scoreboard is so far away from the projections, there are going to be some major pendulum swings in play. We saw one from David Dulkies. He scored a career-high 32, 8 of 10 from three-point range, after shooting 5 of 29 from beyond the arc in the previous 8 games. But when you win the game by 33 as an underdog, it's a beatdown. This is not a case of fluky shooting. Take all 8 of those makes away, and it's still a 9-point margin of victory on the scoreboard. Florida State won the boards by 8. They held North Carolina to 37.3% shooting. They had a sensational defensive count of 22 turnovers forced versus only 8 assists allowed. But some of the focus today has to be on the aftermath, which has been misinterpreted by many sources, a real problem in the blogosphere / Twitter era of 2012.
If you were watching football on Saturday or watching other games, you could have tuned away from this one because Florida State had such a big lead. You might not have noticed, you read the papers afterwards, that North Carolina coach Roy Williams took his starters off the court with 15 seconds left. Some people thought that was a disrespect to Florida State, kind of a slap in the face, and they're already trying to plant a seed. Well, wait till we play them again. You know, look at the way they treated us. Entirely different story here. We're going to go to Williams and to Leonard Hamilton both to explain why there was actually nothing to see here, regardless of the fact that people are trying to fan the flames. First from Roy Williams says, I was not trying to embarrass Florida State by pretending that they could not control the crowd. That's not what I was trying to do at all. I was just trying to protect our team. We had an ugly incident at Las Vegas, and one of our female managers got knocked down. I'm between a rock and a hard place because I love to be able to see college kids celebrate. I have feelings for that as well, but I also think it's dangerous for the visiting team trying to get off the court. I went to talk to Leonard, being Florida State coach Leonard Hamilton, and had already talked to one of the referees when he was over there, and it was almost Leonard's suggestion. Hamilton's take on the same thing? I want to be clear on one thing. I wanted very much for Roy to take his team off the floor so that they wouldn't get caught up in the excitement and jubilance of fans. It wasn't a negative on his part or anything disrespectful. As a matter of fact, I suggested he do that. There was no story here, so don't let people try to sell that as being anything more than it was. What was the real story? North Carolina's got some good athletes, but they could use some more biscuits and gravy in that front court. There is a toughness that is missing, that Tyler Hansborough type of physical play, they don't get that out of this year's front court. Got pushed around a little bit around the basket, lost their poise when things got going. But also the fact that Florida State has a few more weapons this year, Leonard Hamilton doesn't mind running. Instead of having to slow opponents down and gut things out with physical play, they can get out and run a little bit. This Florida State team, with the confidence they gained, could be very interesting to watch in the weeks ahead. We're going to bring back one of our favorite photos of the season that we used in a postmortem topic earlier. San Francisco surrounding a fumble. And it's something that happened often this year. The 49ers are one of the all-time best seasons in the NFL in turnover ratio. So what happens on Saturday against the Saints? The same thing comes back into play. It's the turnovers that tell the tale. Drew Brees hadn't thrown an interception in 226 postseason passes. He throws 2 on Saturday. The Saints had lost 5 fumbles all year. They lost 3 on Saturday. But let's note, this was not a case of bad bounces, which sometimes turnovers are. And when you can do your charting carefully, you want to segregate them that way. Now, this was good defense by the 49ers. Those fumbles were caused by good hits, especially that fumble at the goal line on the first possession of the game, something that really helped to set the tempo. Those were good hits. That was good football. But having said that, did they get what they should have out of those takeaways? That's the conundrum here going forward. We have to put a good power rating on San Francisco now. They're alive. They're playing the Giants Sunday. We're going to be involved. And part of the difficulty is when you take away those bounces, what's left? Some interesting historical perspectives on the way.
Yeah, I mean, there was some merit, some real merit, to how those turnovers happened. And we have to give the 49ers credit for creating turnovers against a team that simply didn't turn the ball over throughout the course of the regular season. But in terms of how they impacted the game flow and the final score, we have to take a historical perspective. We really have to. Let's go back to 1975 to put these counts in the proper place. And these are the long-term numbers, okay? Anytime in the NFL a team has had five turnovers or more since 1975, well, they have a 5% chance of winning. What does that mean? 59 wins, 1,120 losses, and four ties or games that were tied at the end of regulation. That's 59, 1,120. Ooh, not a good record. When a team is minus four net turnovers or more, as the Saints were on Sunday, or Saturday, I should say, that record, 48 and 1,151 with a single push there. That's a 4% chance of winning the game. We're not even talking about covering here. We're talking about winning with New Orleans as road favorites in that contest. So for what it's worth, the teams with a plus four turnover differential or more have gone 19-0, went 19-0 during the regular season this year, and 15 of those 19 wins came by 14 points or more, one blowout after the next. Yet, despite those historical precedents, which basically said the Saints didn't have much of a chance to win that game, guess what? They had the lead not once but twice in the final 2.5 minutes of that contest. So now we move forward. A truly dynamic aspect of this 49er team is their ability to take care of the football and take it away from the opposing team. That's what they've done all year long. But now we're at the NFL's highest stages. The issue becomes, can they win a game if they don't have that massive turnover edge? On Saturday night, they needed every one of those Saints turnovers to escape with a nail-biter of a victory. And while the final score gets etched into the NFL annals forever, the last score on the board right before the final score might have been the most significant one moving forward.
When we come back, we're going to watch a lot of old men playing basketball on TNT tonight. As Money Time begins, you're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
I said I was going to give the halftime score and line of that Knicks Magic game. Let's do that right now. We have the Knicks up 6 at the break, 51-45 halftime line. Orlando minus 3, 94.5. If you're interested in making this wager on either side or total, I'm not. But if you are, run. Don't walk to the betting window. Time to run. For us, it's time to run to Money Time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to Boston, where tonight the Celtics bought a 2.5-point home underdog to the Oklahoma City Thunder. And this is a Boston team. Hey, they're 4-7 right now, which is bad enough. Then we look at who the four wins came against. Well, they beat New Jersey. They beat Washington twice, and they beat Detroit. That's it for the entirety of the Celtics season. They rank number 26, I should say, in strength of schedule difficulty, and they haven't beaten not even a good team. They haven't even beaten a mediocre team yet. Probably going to have to win or come pretty darn close to covering this number. Dave, can the Celtics hang with OKC?
One of the things we're going to have to do at some point is probably shift our perceptions. There, you wanted to have this belief that, okay, in this shortened season, the veteran teams will get out of the gate better. They've got the experience playing together. Now, when you watch the Celtics, they just look old. We did a first take last week about that loss to Dallas, which they only had two offensive rebounds in the entire game. Across the board, age has caught up. Kevin Garnett, not a dominant force offensively or defensively. Look at these numbers for Paul Pierce. Last year, 18.9 points a game, 49.7% shooting. It's all the way down to 14.6 points and shooting 37.2%. Yeah, at some point, Pierce will start to shoot a little bit better. That's not likely to be tonight, though, because he's going to have to guard Kevin Durant. That's going to take a lot of energy away from him. What the Celtics really do miss is having that physical presence inside that allowed the others to play their game. Kendrick Perkins making his return to Boston tonight, a guy they really, really miss. And even Glenn Davis, not a great player, but a role player who fit a particular style for the Celtics. Without that enforcer, the other guys have to be just a little bit more physical. They're a step slow to do that. Here's a question we have tonight, though, and I honestly don't understand this one so far. When you look at the roster, the depth up front and the chemistry, we thought Oklahoma City was going to be a top five defensive team this year. They're sitting all the way down at number 19. So we're going to be watching closely tonight, not just to look for those Boston signs, but what are we missing with this Oklahoma City defense? Why hasn't this group come together on that end of the court the way we thought they would?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the Thunder down low, they should be able to dominate the Celtics. The Celtics can't rebound. As Dave mentioned, Kevin Garnett looking old. I mean, there's no two ways about it. Boston not getting what they've wanted to off their bench. Brandon Bass has been a solid contributor in the low post. But other than that, they don't have that interior enforcer. Oklahoma City does. And the other thing Oklahoma City has, that Boston has too, when it comes to point guard play. Rajon Rondo has been the Celtics by far their MVP so far this season. But we did a lot of criticism about Russell Westbrook on this show. We did a postmortem about him. We talked about him in the six-pack. We talked about it in previous OKC games where Westbrook, you know, turning the ball over, taking bad shots, all the things that plagued him in the postseason last year. Well, since that rough start, Westbrook has found his game. The first four, he shot 33% from the floor and averaged 6.3 turnovers per game. Well, the nine games since, Westbrook shooting better than 48% and averaging only 2.3 turnovers, a four turnover per game improvement over where he was over the first few week of the season.
Let's go to the Staples Center in Los Angeles. First encounter for the Lakers since being blown apart by Dallas in the playoffs last year. Lakers right now a 3.5-point favorite. Harken back to late last spring. A 4-0 Dallas sweep culminated in one of the most memorable games we've seen in quite some time for the way that it ended. A 122-86 blowout. Unfortunate blowout for Phil Jackson that day. Lakers lost their composure. A couple of guys thrown out of the game. They've waited a long time to get their measure of revenge against Dallas. And now the door might be open a little bit because, you know what? It's an entirely different Maverick team coming into L.A.
Yeah, there's a big difference between defending Andrew Bynum and Pau Gasol with a Tyson Chandler slash Brendan Haywood duo versus what's happening right now with Brendan Haywood alone. And Dallas defensively, simply not the same team in the low post so far this season. And it's reflected in their overall defensive numbers. Still good overall numbers. And number six, that's the Lakers at number six. Dallas, number four on our best set of defensive charts. But the bottom line is we haven't seen them face off against an opponent with that Gasol slash Bynum capability in the low post on a regular basis yet this season. And I suspect they may struggle with it tonight. For the Lakers, another issue here. I mean, we've seen Kobe play remarkably well, really. I don't know, Dave, you talked a little bit about the Clips and Lakers on Saturday night. And when Kobe started going nuts in the third quarter, did you start sweating in that ballgame? I mean, Kobe single-handedly carried the team for about 8 minutes of that ballgame.
You know, not quite. Here's the conundrum with Kobe right now. He's scoring four consecutive games of 40 points or more. That's awfully good. He's shooting the ball very well. But if you look at the final scores of those games, nothing all that impressive. They lose to the Clippers. They got to go to overtime to get it out against Utah. Here's the problem. Now, look at these counts. In those four games, 121 field goal attempts, 48 free throw attempts. How about only 14 assists to go with 13 turnovers? He's shooting well. Our team's going to get to the point, though, where they said, you know what? The best way to defend the Lakers is let's let Kobe shoot 20-footers. were actually better allowing him to have that shot than getting the ball down low. That's why it's going to be interesting to see what the Dallas game plan is going to be tonight. Dallas has a lot of zones in their arsenal. Don't be surprised if they say, you know what, we're going to go zone. We got to protect Hayward. We want to keep him out of foul trouble. Kobe, if you want to shoot those 20-footers, ring up 35, ring up 40, that's fine. We're going to try to stop the rest of your team and beat you. We just may see that strategy playing out.
Sure, because the Lakers, 21.3 points per game off the bench. That's dead last in the NBA so far this season. They've got no production coming off the pine. And Kobe, 38 or more minutes in six straight games, given the brutal nature of this year's NBA schedule and Kobe's old, tired legs. That's not a sustainable amount for Mike Brown to keep him in the lineup. It's worth noting about that Mavericks defense. 77.2 points per game allowed since Jason Kidd missed his four-game set. Of course, Dallas 4-0 straight up and against the spread without Kidd in the lineup. And then when he returned, well, they win by 99-60 over Sacramento in a non-competitive game on Saturday. Worth noting, Dirk struggling a little bit still so far this season. Last year, 23 points a game at 51.7% shooting. This year, 17.7 points a game, nearly 5.5 points worse. And he's only shooting at 46.9%. His three-point shooting down as well.
When we come back, it's a special big Monday in front of the ESPN cameras. Two of the three teams left unbeaten in the nation are going to be out there tonight. We'll tell you how many will still be undefeated when the counting's done. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's go to the Carrier Dome in Syracuse, where one of the three unbeaten teams, of course, Murray State, we can't forget about Murray State as an unbeaten, but one of the three major conference teams that is still undefeated. Number one in the nation, the Syracuse Orange. Boy, they have struggled against Pitt repeatedly in this series. Five straight Pitt wins, eight of the last nine for Pitt. Four straight wins for Pitt on the road right here in the Carrier Dome, and yet Syracuse laying doubles tonight. Dave, what gives?
But shrinking doubles. Interesting that this line has come down from 15 to 13. Markets reacting perhaps a little bit to that history. But does the history maybe get turned inside out here? This is not the Pitt team by any stretch of the imagination of those predecessors. Six straight losses. Now you got to go back to 98-99 under Ralph Willard to find the last time a Pitt team had lost six in a row. And they really are that bad. They had a huge breakout from Ashton Gibbs against Marquette on Saturday. Moved him back to the number two. He had been running the point instead of Trayvon Woodall. It was wearing him down. It was taking a shot away. They move him to two. What happens? Monster game. Comes out and he scores 29 points. The rest of the team, he scored 28. Back-to-back games, players other than Gibbs have scored 28 and 31 points. That's how limited they are. So now this creates this different dynamic with Syracuse. You've been pushing us around for a long time. We got a chance to push back. When we get you down, we might not let you back up. In some ways, the history that seemingly tells you that Pitt is the play here might actually work the other way from a Syracuse motivational standpoint. Boy, they've got a whole lot of reasons to be motivated tonight.
And the scary thing for Pitt is that when Syracuse empties their bench, guess what? They're still a great team. This is the deepest team that Jim Boeheim has ever had. He's been quoted as saying that. They're going for 20-0 tonight, which has set the school record for the best start to the season. Boeheim's one win away from Adolph Rupp and a tie for number four all time. There isn't a player on the Orange roster that's averaged more than 29 minutes per game so far this season. 10 different players average at least 12 minutes per game for Syracuse. Their last game against Providence, starters only played 91 of the 200 possible minutes against the Friars, We're talking about a team that's number one in the nation in turnover margin, number one in the nation in steals, number four in block shots, and number seven in assist to turnover ratio. Syracuse bringing it on both ends of the floor so far this season. Pitt bringing it on neither.
Let's go to Fog Island Fieldhouse in Lawrence, Kansas. Right now, Kansas, a 7-point favorite over the unbeaten Baylor Bears. Interesting to note, if you see the openers here, money against both of the unbeatens in those matchups tonight. If there are questions about Baylor, it might be, can they hold up in this type of environment? Are they ready for this level of pressure? You know what? They've been pretty good away from Waco this year. Outright road wins at Kansas State, Brigham Young, and Northwestern. Most likely, you got two NCAA teams and Northwestern, at least an NIT team on that list. Neutral courts. They beat St. Mary's in West Virginia right here in Las Vegas. Also beat Mississippi State. So they're showing the signs that they're athletically good enough. But tonight in Fog Island, it's one of the more frenzied crowds you're going to see all year. It's going to be a question of mental toughness now for Baylor. Do they have enough of that? Not talking about just winning the game, but stay within the seven. If they get down, will they compete?
Well, I mean, Baylor's passed all the mental tests so far. They've hung tough in every hostile environment. They won at Northwestern. They won at BYU. They won at K-State. They beat St. Mary's and West Virginia and Mississippi State in neutrals. They've done all of that. But, and this is a but, and a big but, you know, as big as Dave's but, in fact, for that matter. But the bottom line is Thomas Robinson for Kansas. He's, in my mind, he's been the best player I've seen on the college, on any college team this year. He's been unbelievable in terms of energy, in terms of rebounding, in terms of shot selection, in terms of getting his teammates involved, in terms of defensive pressure. 17.2 points, 12.2 rebounds. It's not about the stats, though. It's about all the intangibles he brings to that team. And they need those intangibles. There's only a single senior, Tyshawn Taylor, in the rotation for the Jayhawks this year. The youth has served them well in many regards, but at the same time, they have been vulnerable, even on this floor, despite the talent level they've had. And let's not forget, the biggest win they had this year against Ohio State. Boy, Ohio State looked pretty good on TV yesterday. But the biggest win that they had against Ohio State, or we talked about this on the show before, the Buckeyes were without their big man, Jared Sullinger. Baylor, they're a team loaded with big talent, aren't they, Dave?
So are we going to go tonight? You'd look to take a little bit of the seven. But we use the phrase tough out a lot when we're playing on road underdogs. And that's when you bring those elements that make you competitive in a game, make you hard to block. A lot of times an offensive team won't be a tough out because they give up too many easy baskets on defense. A lot of times a team with a shallow rotation won't be a tough out. There's that snap factor. Baylor doesn't have the snap factor. They defend hard. They've got all five starters scoring in double figures, and they've got 10 players playing double-figure minutes. So they're not going to do anything that opens the door for you to take them out of the game. If you're going to beat them, you have to do just that. You have to beat them. Those are the teams we classify as a tough out. Yeah, they might not win the game, but if you're going to beat this team by more than 7 points, you better bring something pretty special. So, yeah, we're going to have a little bit of Baylor in our pocket, but while Baylor's in our pocket, we're going to be sipping something else. We didn't do Insider Six-Pack today. Can you pop a single bottle of Orange Crush?
Well, let's pop a can of Orange Crush. You know, that's easy enough
like
to do.
I like bottles better.
We could do it. It's virtual. It's a virtual can. I've never seen a bottle of Orange Crush.
You've never seen a bottle of Orange Crush?
Does it exist? Cans. Orange Crush is in cans.
Where have you been all these years?
Well, that's what she said. Bottom line for today, play of the day, we're going to go up to Syracuse, New York, and we're going to lay it with the Orange. Syracuse minus 13. The betting markets say Syracuse is the wrong side. We disagree. We're going to say Syracuse is the right side. Looking for another blowout from Jim Boeheim and company. Syracuse minus 13. That's the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. And it's going to wrap it up for our Monday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. From Alinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games. Good luck.